welcome to this episode of Future Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Inês Dawson, and today I'm joined by two very special guests, Fabien Thibault, Global Manager of Product and Packaging Sustainability at Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany. Fabien, great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Inês. I'm really happy to be on Future Talk today.
And a very warm welcome to Alan Phipps, Vice President of Sustainability Consulting at Pure Strategies, a sustainability consulting firm that empowers brands and retailers in realizing meaningful environmental and social improvement. Alan, we're thrilled you could join us today.
Thank you, Inés. Hello, Fabien. It's great to be with you. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Now, our mantra here on Future Talk is curiosity changes everything. We explore how curious minds use science and technology for the greater good of humankind. And today, I'd really like to explore the topic of packaging, something that, when properly managed, will actually have a huge influence on sustainability. So, Fabien, I don't know about you, but when I receive a parcel that dwarfs its content, it's always frustrating. You know, those cases where you receive a giant box and tons of peanuts, but then the actual item that you ordered is tiny in comparison. Is this kind of wastage avoidable? And what can industry do to avoid this type of event?
Inés, when we live the experience you have just described, I assume that we all ask about why. Why so much packaging? Why don't they simply use a smaller box? The fact is that this issue is more complex than what it seems to be. And in fact, there can be a multitude of parameters that can lead to an excess of packaging. Of course, there can be errors, and these have to be corrected. But for a company which wants to reduce amount of packaging and excess of packaging, it's really important to implement a comprehensive approach that addresses important areas, including the improvement of the product development process to make sure that the product is developed taking into consideration the packaging so that we can reduce, minimize the requirements on the packaging that can lead to excess of packaging. It's also about implementing good practices to develop more sustainable product packaging. And it's also about improving the distribution practices in order to limit excess of packaging when we ship products to customers. I really think that it is in consideration of these important steps of a product and the packaging lifecycle that we can help companies to significantly reduce amount of packaging.
I was wondering if you could tell us more about what steps or initiatives your company has taken to reduce the impact of excess packaging and the impact it has on the environment. What does that look like?
We have collaborated with Alan and with many internal and external stakeholders to develop a comprehensive plan aiming at improving the sustainability of our packaging across our organization. We identify three pillars with the greatest opportunity for improvement and environmental impact. These pillars are the optimization of the resources, the use of more sustainable materials, and designing for circular economy. To support these pillars and drive improvement, we set four key goals with, for each of them, specific targets for 2022. These targets address both the development of new product packaging and the improvement of existing product and distribution packaging. This plan, that is named Smash Packaging, was officially launched in 2019. And since its launch, we have notably defined new packaging sustainability standards and guidelines so that our development teams can apply them during the product development process in order to develop more sustainable packaging for our new products. And in parallel of that, we have worked with our colleagues across the organization on some specific projects and initiatives to reduce amount of packaging.
Now, I want to direct some questions at Alan. So you're a sustainability expert with 17 years of experience in the field under your belt. How do you feel when you encounter avoidable packaging waste?
Yes, Inés, when I see excess packaging, I see a missed opportunity, both from a sustainability and a business perspective. On the sustainability side, We know that excess packaging consumes more resources, more energy, generates more greenhouse gas emissions, and produces more waste, you know, that is sent to landfills. On the business side, excess packaging can add cost, right? But I think more importantly, it can also negatively impact a company's brand reputation. You know, as you described, you know, consumers and customers are very keenly aware when they see excess packaging or avoidable packaging waste, because they're the ones that have to deal with the packaging at its end of life. They have to make the decision whether it's recyclable or whether it goes to landfill. Oftentimes, they're the ones that actually pay for the disposal of the packaging. So when a company fails to address excess packaging, that company may be, you know, is at risk of being viewed as being less sustainable or less responsible.
Yes, that is certainly true. And there's always this impression I get that there's a balance between companies trying to stand out by having flashy packaging and also companies standing out perhaps for the wrong reasons for having flashy packaging that doesn't really lend itself to being recyclable. Now, you support Fabien and his team in achieving more sustainable packaging solutions. How did the collaboration come about? Was there a lot to do, having assessed the initial packaging situation at Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany?
Yes, we began the collaboration fairly early in the journey towards sustainability. I've been working with Fabienne and the sustainability group for more than 10 years now. What we started on back then was conducting life cycle assessments of key products to really establish a baseline understanding of where the sustainability hotspots were for the products. This includes packaging as well. And, you know, what we gained from these life cycle assessments was not only identifying where the hotspots were, but what the key drivers for those hotspots were. And this became the basis for the development of the Design for Sustainability program. The Design for Sustainability program, I think, is one of the key accomplishments that has been the result of our collaboration. What that involved was integrating Design for Sustainability directly into the product development process. So there's actually a stage gate in the product development process where sustainability of the packaging and the product is assessed. And this is really critical because most sustainability impacts, environmental impacts, are really baked into the design very early in the design stage. So being able to address that early in the design stage is a very effective way to reduce sustainability impacts. It also drives innovation as well.
Speaking of innovation, I was wondering if you could tell us about any specific highlights or innovations that have resulted from the partnership.
Right. So in addition to the integrating Design for Sustainability into their business, I think that's a very significant accomplishment. And I think the second accomplishment really is the development of the Smash Packaging Initiative. And really, in developing that initiative, the packaging initiative, we used kind of the same approach. We did an assessment of the packaging systems that are commonly used by the company. And this involved really a multi-stakeholder approach. We got input from internal stakeholders, such as packaging designers and product designers. We consulted with external stakeholders, industry experts in recycling and packaging. We also got feedback from customers. In addition to that, we did kind of life cycle assessment type assessments of the packaging to really determine what are the hotspots, what are the key opportunities. And with this information, we developed a roadmap for driving improvement for the sustainability priorities for packaging.
So if you'll pardon the pun, it seems like you've managed to package a lot in your partnership. Now, Fabien, your company creates hundreds of thousands of products, and many of those, I imagine, have extremely specific packaging requirements. Is a company-wide initiative such as Smash Packaging hard to implement?
Yeah, Ines, you're right that we are working in a complex and global organization. And packaging is basically everywhere with a different level of requirements and constraints. One of the key elements has been to involve our key internal stakeholders as early as possible during the development of the plan. We presented the initial draft to them. We had many discussions and we took into account their inputs in order to get to the final version of the plan. This took time and we had a lot of exchanges and discussion with Alan as well on that. But it was really an important step as we wanted to make sure that our internal stakeholders were comfortable with the elements of the plan, so that they can commit to it and become real advocates as we start to implement. Of course, it is not always easy. We are working with plenty of colleagues from various groups, which all have their own goals and priorities. So it's really important to continuously educate our colleagues and stakeholders on the importance of implementing sustainability in our daily jobs. Smash packaging is challenging. It's a challenging journey, but it is definitely worth it. In 1 year and a half, we have launched some important initiatives such as zero deforestation, EPS replacement, airspace reduction. And these initiatives will progressively transform how we deal with packaging. And basically, it is just the beginning.
Those sound like some very admirable accomplishments. And I'd actually love to hear a bit more about what you're both working on currently, if you're able to share details on any new innovations and what else is to come.
Yes, of course. I briefly mentioned the name of an important initiative, which is our Zero Deforest initiative that is part of the plan. For this initiative, we have notably developed a comprehensive approach to demonstrate that the wood and fiber-based material that we use to pack and ship our products to our customers do not contribute to deforestation. We defined our zero deforestation standards and we have implemented an annual deforestation assessment process with our vendors. Through this process, we collect information from their sourcing practices and also information on the sustainability characteristic of the material they supply to us. From this data, we measure our level of alignment with our zero deforestation standards, and we also identify opportunities for improvement. And of course, the next step is to work on these opportunities for improvement that will allow us to move toward our zero deforestation target.
Out of curiosity, how do you define the zero deforestation standards?
Yeah, we set a set of standards to demonstrate that our wood and fiber-based packaging materials do not contribute to deforestation. These standards include the use of sustainably certified materials, so materials with sustainable forestry certification, such as FSC or PEFC, or notably SFI in the US. We are looking also at increasing the use of materials made of recycled content, because when we use recycled content, we don't need to use virgin fibers, and so we don't contribute to deforestation. And the third part is to ensure that we are working with vendors that can demonstrate responsible sourcing practices.
Wonderful. I'm also curious to hear Alan's side, whether you're able to share anything that you might be working on currently or what new innovations could we expect for 2021?
Yes. And as we are getting ready to focus on the end of life of packaging starting in 2021, and this is going to be really exciting work, one of the goals is to understand how customers are currently managing the packaging materials at the end of life in order to better identify the barriers to recycling. We're not just striving for using recyclable packaging, but we actually want to use packaging that gets recycled. And there is a difference there. And understanding the application and the steps that customers need to take in order to recycle these materials is really critical in developing new packaging systems that actually get recycled. Another area that we're going to be focusing on is making sure that recycled materials retain as much value as they can. And this involves removing aspects of the packaging system that could be contaminants in the recycling process. We want to avoid downcycling. We want to retain the value of the recyclable material so that it can be turned back into packaging material, for example. And this involves looking at some of the coatings and the labels and inks that are used to make sure that they are acceptable in the recycling industry.
I just wanted to build on what Alan has just said and just talk briefly about one example that I think is a good example of our already existing efforts to improve the recycling of our packaging. And this is related to the recent implementation of our new greener cooler. This cooler is an alternative solution to our traditional expanded polystyrene coolers that are used for the shipment of temperature sensitive products. And in fact, it is made of paper and starch, and it is certified recyclable with corrugated materials, which is a huge improvement compared to our traditional EPS coolers that can't be recycled by our customers. So we have started a pilot implementation at one of our distribution centers in the US, and we are working to expand the use of this type of coolers in our main distribution centers in the US, but also in other regions.
Wonderful. So it's one of the things that I love about these podcasts is that there's always this recurring theme that in order for these partnerships to succeed, there's plenty of examples of interdisciplinary collaborations and a mixture of different disciplines coming together. So, Fabian, there are many researchers and scientists at your company that I understand are working with big data, artificial intelligence, virtual reality, as well as, you know, a whole host of exciting fields. Do these technologies also play a role in improving the sustainability of product packaging?
Yes, I think that artificial intelligence and data notably already play a quite important role in packaging in general. If we take the example of distribution packaging and the systems that define the best packaging configuration based on the characteristics of the products that are ordered by the customer, this type of artificial intelligence is key to ensure safety and compliance, but also key to improve the sustainability by making sure that we are using the right box with the right amount of packing materials. And if we look further at how this type of systems could learn from other parameters or other feedback from maybe from shipment data or from customer complaints and typically adapt and improve, we start, I think, to see the potential, but also the interdependence between artificial intelligence and data. And I think that more globally, data is really a critical element for improving sustainability of packaging. It allows you to measure, to understand and identify where there are issues and opportunities for improvement. But it then also helps you to prioritize your efforts for a bigger impact.
Yes, I completely agree, especially the use of big data, as you said. It can be an excellent way both to identify hotspots of need and areas that might need more work, but also could offer ways of modeling better ways of building packaging. Alan, I'm also curious to hear whether you've also used technologies involving big data and artificial intelligence, whether they've influenced your work or research.
Yes, this is a great question. I think there's one area that really there's tremendous need for new technologies like this and great potential as well. And that is responsible sourcing of materials. Responsible sourcing requires traceability back to the location where the materials are extracted or harvested. And it also requires transparency to all the practices that are employed for the production and distribution of the materials. When I talk about practices, I'm referring to, you know, agricultural practices or mining practices, even labor practices. So we need transparency to all the way through the supply chain. And one technology that's starting to be used for this is blockchain technology. Blockchain can be used to securely record transactions through supply chains to provide the traceability that we need. It's particularly valuable for applications where maintaining chain of custody is critical, such as the certified forestry materials that Fabienne mentioned earlier. There is another technology that I'm really excited about, and that is the use of satellite imagery to ensure sustainable sourcing, particularly for materials that are driving deforestation. And these materials are like palm oil, soybeans, and beef. This satellite-based monitoring of forests can help detect and prevent illegal clearing of forests. It also, I think, is a very valuable tool in raising public awareness, because there are websites you can go to now to actually see this imagery and witness, you know, firsthand the deforestation. And they actually provide information about what are the key drivers, what are the commodities that we're using that are leading to this deforestation. So it's really important communication tool as well.
Now, as a biologist, I did my PhD in biomechanics. So I spent 4 or 5 years of my life both working with big data, but also becoming absolutely fascinated with biomimicry. So we've talked a lot about big data and how computational modeling can be useful. But I'm also curious to know whether there are any innovative processes and solutions that nature might have provided to packaging. So I'm thinking off the top of my head, things such as bees and how they build honeycombs, adapting space in the most efficient way possible to pack their larvae and their pupae. Or for instance, bacteria are often used for biodegradable recycling. I also think about hermit crabs who recycle the shells of other whelks and snails. And also they have a very complex system where they determine which shell fits each crab best so they can both utilize it for the longest time possible. So I would love to hear first from Fabienne and then from Alan, to what degree has your work been inspired by nature, and can we further improve sustainability in packaging with its help and secrets?
Yeah, Ines, I have no biology background, but I would say that I am always impressed when I hear about how the design of a product was inspired by the nature, maybe by a specific plant or by an animal. In fact, a few weeks ago, I watched a report on TV with my kids, and this report was on trains. And they were talking about how the design of the famous Japanese high-speed train was inspired by the shape of the beak of a specific bird. And typically that this allowed to solve some technical challenges, but also to reduce the environmental impact and notably the consumption of energy of the train. And in packaging, yeah, the first example that comes to my mind, and you mentioned it, is this honeycomb structure that we use basically a lot in protective packaging application, notably for glass bottles. So when we have to ship glass bottle with chemicals inside to customers, so we have some packing configuration where we use honeycomb structure, because this structure provides strength with an optimized amount of materials and amount of space. So I think that this is a quite simple, but really a great example of how the nature can help us to design new product or packaging that improves sustainability. I really think that we have much more to learn from the nature about how to make things more sustainably. And I am convinced that biomimicry will be one of the keys to a more sustainable future, and notably to solve some of our major packaging-related sustainability issues.
I completely agree. I wonder, Alan, if you have any examples to add or any instances where your work has been inspired by nature?
Yes, I agree with Fabienne that we have a lot to learn from nature. And I think nature is a perfect role model for a circular economy. You know, I think if we imagine producing packaging materials that were modeled after the natural cycles, it would be an amazing accomplishment. Nature produces amazing materials, including all sorts of fibers and polymers, and it does it using just renewable resources and energy from the sun. And when these materials reach the end of life, they break down into the building blocks for future materials without the release of any pollution to the air, to the water. Another aspect of this is that the number of cycles is infinite because there's no downcycling or degradation of the material like we have in our recycling systems. People are really excited about chemical recycling of plastics because it's an opportunity to break down the plastic into the monomers, into the building block compounds, and produce pure new plastic from that that can be used for any application. So in that sense, you know, chemical recycling seems like a step in the right direction, but currently it's not meeting nature's gold standard of being powered by the sun or not using synthetic chemicals or fossil fuels, not releasing any pollutants to the environment. My hope is that we can continue to learn from nature and make progress towards a more circular economy. And I think that the opportunities are there in chemical recycling. I think we have the capability to power our processes from the sun. We have the capability to produce polymers from renewable resources. I think we need to better understand how we can break down those polymers using natural processes and, you know, use those building block compounds to produce new polymers rather than continue to source polymers from fossil fuels.
Absolutely. I completely agree with what both of you said, that there's plenty we can learn from nature. I mean, there's that famous quote, everything we do in science and everything we study is built on the shoulders of giants. And truly, I'd say nature is probably our greatest giant out there. After all, life has been around for 3.5 billion years. So that's a long time for evolution and natural selection to have found out very efficient ways to do things. Now, unfortunately, I'm going to have to end on this thought because we are all out of time on this podcast, but it's been really fascinating talking to both of you today. Thank you so much for joining us on Future Talk. Thank you, Fabian, for sharing your thoughts and impulses with us.
Yeah, thanks again, Ines. It has been a great experience for me.
And Alan, many thanks to you too for sharing your insights and expertise with us here on Future Talk too.
Thank you, Ines. Thank you for the opportunity to join you in this interesting conversation.
And as always, a huge thank you to everyone out there listening. We really hope you've enjoyed today's episode, and we look forward to welcoming you next time as we talk to more curious minds from the fields of science, tech, and beyond. But until then, thanks for tuning into Future Talk, and remember to stay curious.